stupid dare. You have startled and delighted me several times. I think you have the courage to do anything you want to do.
Possibly, Theodore, but I have limits on what I will do, no matter how much I want to.
Do you want to know my limits? If you want me to know, you'll tell me. If you don't, you won't.
I want you to know, beloved Theodore, I would like to strip naked this very moment. I refrain only for practical reasons. Not moral ones, not shyness. I want to give you my body. Let you enjoy it in any way you please, while I enjoy yours. There are no limits to what I want to do with you, but only to what I will do. First, she ticked them off. I will not risk becoming pregnant by any man but Brian. Second, I will not knowingly risk the well-being of my husband and children.
What are you risking that tonight?
Was I, Theodore?
Lazarus thought about it. Pregnancy? Not a factor. Disease? She apparently trusted him on that. And yes, darling, you are right. I don't know why you hold that opinion of me, but you're right. What does that leave? A chance of scandal if we had been caught. How much chance? Very little. It's as safe a spot as one could wish. Cops?
Lazarus doubted that police ever checked that spot, and doubted still more strongly that a policeman, in the present war fever, would tell a soldier in uniform more than break it up and move on.
No, my darling, you took no risks. If I had asked you to undress completely, would you have done so?
Her laugh rang like chimes. Then she answered in her controlled pitch, more private than a whisper, I thought about that while I was taking a quick bath to make myself sweet for you, Theodore. It was a delightfully tempting idea. Brian has had me do so outdoors oftener than that once. It excites me, and he says that makes me more fun for him. But that's a risk he chooses to take, so it worries me not at all with him. But I did not think it fair to him to take that risk on my own, so I firmly resolved, with my nipples crinkled up as hard as you felt them, hard as they are now, I'm terribly excited, I resolved not only not to undress, but not to let you do so. Dear, will you pay for another pony ride, or fetch him if he's tired of that? Lazarus found that Woody wanted another ride. He paid and went back to the bench, Flamarine staring down a lonely soldier. Lazarus touched his sleeve.
On your way, Private.
The soldier looked around, ready to argue, looked again and said,
Oh, sorry, Sergeant. No offense meant.
And none taken. Better luck elsewhere.
Marine said, I hate to snub a boy in uniform, even when I must. He wasn't fresh to me, Theodore. He was just exploring the chances. I must be twice his age and was tempted to tell him so, but it would have hurt his feelings.
The trouble is that you look 18, so they're certain to try.
Darling, I do not look 18. Me with a daughter over 17? If Nancy marries her young man before he goes to war, she wants to, and Brian and I won't stop it, I'll be a grandmother this coming year.
Hi, Grandma.
Tease. I will enjoy being a grandmother.
I'm certain you will, dear. I think you have great capacity for enjoying life.
As I do, Mama. And now I feel sure I got it both from you and Pop.
I do, Theodore. She smiled. Even when frustrated. Very.
Me too, very. But we were talking about how old you look. 18, that is.
Pooh. You noticed how broken down and baby-chewed my breasts are?
I noticed nothing of the sort.
Then you have no sense of touch, sir. For you handled them quite thoroughly.
Excellent sense of touch. Lovely breasts.
Theodore, I try to take care of them, but they've been filled with milk much of the past 18 years. That one, she nodded toward the pony ring, I didn't have enough milk for, and had to put him on Eagle Brand, and he resented it. When I had Richard 2 years later, Woodrow tried to crowd out the new baby and take my freshened breasts. I had to be firm, when what I wanted was to have one at each breast. But one must be fair to children, not spoil one at the expense of another. She smiled indulgently. I have no sense about Woodrow, so I must follow my rules to the letter. Come back in a year, Theodore, and they won't seem so broken down. They swell out and make me look like a cow.
Will you make it worth my while?
My walnut tree? Probably no chance, dear one. I'm afraid my scamp killed our one chance.
Oh, it wouldn't take that much to make it worthwhile. I was thinking of a taste, direct from producer to consumer.
Mama Maureen, that's Galahad says, and I've never argued. I'm the most tit-happy man in the galaxy, and I'm staring at the spot where I acquired the habit. I wish I could tell you so, darling.
She looked startled, snorted, and looked delighted.
That might be almost as hard to arrange as a walnut tree. But, yes, if it can be done without shocking my children. You are a scamp, too, just like Woodrow. I know I would enjoy it, because, this is secret, dear. Brian has tasted each new freshening. Claims solemnly that he's checking quality and butterfat content.
Pop, you're a man of good taste. Does he ever find that one has a different taste from the other?
She chuckled happily. Dear one, you have so many playful quirks, just like my husband, that you make me feel bigamous. He claims so, but it's just more of his joking. I can't tell any difference, and I've tasted.
Madam, I look forward to giving you an expert's opinion. I think our cowboy has worn out his pony. What next? Want to try the Ben Hur racer?
She shook her head.
I enjoy roller coasters, but won't go on one now. I've never miscarried, Theodore, and never will, if being careful will keep me from it. Take Woodrow if you like. No, you would have to wait, and these woods are filled with wolves in khaki anxious to pick up 18-year-old grandmothers. The funhouse?
All right.
Then her mouth twitched.
No, I forgot something. Those blasts of air up from the floor intended to make girls squeal and clutch their skirts, which I don't mind, but no bloomers, dear, unless you want everyone to see whether or not I'm truly a redhead.
Are you?
She smiled, unoffended. Tease, don't you know?
It was very dark near that walnut tree.
Redhead at both ends, Theodore, as I would happily show you were it not for the frustrating circumstances. Brian asked me that while we were courting. Teasing, he didn't need to ask. I was covered with freckles then, just like Marie. I let him find out for himself on a grassy spot by the Medizin River, while a gentle old mare named Daisy cropped grass and paid no attention to my happy squeals. I suppose the automobile is here to stay, but the horse and buggy had many advantages. Didn't you find it so, when you started stepping out with young ladies? Lazarus agreed with a straight face, unable to admit that his memories did not include 1899 or whatever year she was thinking of. Maureen went on, I used to fix a picnic lunch and take a blanket to eat on. That was one way a girl of courting age could be unchaperoned as long as I was home before dark. A horse can take a buggy into spots even more private than our walnut tree. Truthfully, despite this modern talk about wild women and morals breaking down, I have more freedom as a girl than my daughters do, although I try not to make my chaperonage oppressive.
They don't seem oppressed. I'm sure they're happy.
Theodore, I would much rather have my children be happy than what our pastor says is moral. I simply want to be sure they aren't hurt. I am not moral by accepted rules, as you know quite well, though not as well as I had hoped you would know it, and I'm taking out my frustration in talking about it. Perhaps you would rather I did not?
Maureen, since we can't do it, the next best thing is talking about it.
Me too, Theodore. I wish I were covered with chickabites and my soul filled with the peace I know you could give me. Since I can't give myself to you the way I had hoped, I want you to know me as deeply as words can bring us together. as deeply as I wish you were in my body this very instant. Does my frankness shock you?
No, but it might get you raped right on this bench.
Please, not so much enthusiasm, dear one. People can see us. We're talking about the weather. Tell me, is your thing hard?
Does it show?
No, but if it is, think about blizzards and icebergs. Brian says that helps, because our pony rider needs to be lifted down. They played both games for prizes. Then Mrs. Smith decided that she could risk the funhouse if she clutched her skirts, as if crossing a muddy street. Woody enjoyed it, especially the Hall of Mirrors and the Crystal Maze. Marlene avoided air blasts by watching girls ahead of them. Then either walked on one side or held her skirts firmly. Woody tired himself out, so Lazarus picked him up, and he seemed to fall asleep as his head touched Lazarus' shoulder. They started to leave, which took them over the farewell air blast. Mrs. Smith was ahead, and Lazarus assumed that she had it spotted from the way she swerved. Then she turned, as if to speak to him, and stood over it. Her skirts went flying high. She did not squeal. She simply pushed them down a split second too late. Once they were outside, she said, "Well, sir?"
"Same color, but curly, I think."
"Quite. As curly as my other hair is straight, as you already knew."
"And you did it on purpose?"
"Certainly. Woodrow was asleep and you had his head turned away. Perhaps some stranger got an eyeful, but I think not. If someone did, what can he do? Write a letter to my husband? Pooh. There was no one in there who knows us. I kept my eyes open and grabbed the chance."
"Marine, you continue to amaze and delight me."
"Thank you, sir."
"And you have beautiful limbs."
"Legs, Theodore. Brian says so, too. But I'm no expert on women's legs. But when he tells me so, he always says legs. Limbs is for public speech. So he says."
"The more I know about the captain, the more I like him. You have gorgeous legs and green garters."
"Of course they're green. When I was a little girl, I wore green hair ribbons. I'm too old for hair ribbons. But if there is the teensiest possibility that my curls will be seen, I wear green garters. I have many pairs. Brian gives them to me. Some with naughty mottos on them."
"Are there mottos on these?"
"Little pitchers, Theodore. Let's get Woodrow settled down in the back seat." It seemed to Lazarus that little pitchers could not be listening. The child was limp as a rag doll. Nor did he wake when he was bedded down. He curled into fetal position, and his mother put the robe over him. Lazarus handed her into the car, cranked it, and joined her.
"Straight home?"
she said thoughtfully. "There is plenty of gasoline. Brian Jr. filled the tank this afternoon. I don't think Woodrow will wake."
"I know there's enough gasoline. I checked when I went out to meet Mr. Johnson's captain. Shall I find that walnut tree?"
"Oh, dear, please don't tempt me. Woodrow might wake up and could climb over the back and get out as easily as he climbed in and hid. He's not old enough to understand what we would be doing. Nevertheless, I think his misunderstanding of it could upset him just as much." "No, Theodore. What I meant is this. It's not late. It's just late for a little boy. While he sleeps, we can ride around and talk for, an hour, if you wish."
"We'll do that." He got rolling and added, "Marine, although I want to take you back to that walnut tree, I think it's best that we don't. Best for you, I mean."
"But, darling, why? Don't you think I want you?"
"I do think you want me, and God knows I want you. But despite your brave talk, I don't think you've ever done that. You would want to confess to your husband, and if you did, it would make you both unhappy. And I don't want to make Captain Smith unhappy either. He's a good sort. Or maybe you could keep it to yourself, but it would prey on your mind. Because while you love me, a little, you love him a great deal more, and I'm sure of that. So it's best. Isn't that so?"
Mrs. Smith was silent for a long moment. Then she said, "Theodore, take me straight to that walnut tree."
"No."
Why not, dear? I must show you that I do love you, and that I am not afraid to let you have me.
Lorraine, you would do it. You have the courage to do anything. But you would be tense and worried, afraid that Woody would wake up.
And you do love Brian. All the sweetly intimate things you've told me kept saying that.
But Woody would wake up.
And you do love Brian. All the sweetly intimate things you've told me kept saying that.
But don't you think my heart is big enough for both of you?
I'm certain it is. You love 10 people that I know of. I'm sure you can squeeze in one more. But I love you and do not want you to do anything that would make a wall between you and your husband. Or hurt you both for your trying to tear down that wall by confessing. Beloved, I want your love even more than I want your dear sweet body.
Again, she was silent before speaking. Theodore, I must tell you things about my husband and me. Private things.
You shouldn't. I should and I must, and I shall. But please, will you touch me while I talk? Don't say anything. Just touch me closely and intimately and nakedly while I strip myself naked with words. Please? Lazarus put his free hand on her thigh. She pulled up her skirts, opened her thighs, and pushed his hand more firmly to her. Then she covered his hand with her skirt and spoke in an even, steady voice. Theodore, beloved, I love Brian, and Brian loves me, and he knows exactly what I am. I could keep a secret forever to keep from hurting him, and he would do the same for me. I must tell you what he said to me before he went away to Plattsburgh, and I must use bedroom words, Theodore. Polite words don't have the force it must have. The night before he left, we were in bed and had just had each other. Me still wrapped around him like a curling iron, and him still deep inside me. Swivel Hips, he said, a pet name he calls me in bed. I didn't sail the Rio to tie you down. If you want to drive, buy a Ford. It's easier to learn on. I told him I didn't want to drive. I would wait until he came home. He answered, "All right, Hot Bottom." And that's a pet name, too, and Brian means it most lovingly. "All right, Hot Bottom. But buy one if you wish. You may need a car while I'm gone." "But a car is a minor matter. Your father will be here, and that's good, but don't let him boss you. He'll try. He can't help it. It's his nature. But you are as strong-willed as he is. Stand up to him. He'll respect you for it." "Now to more important matters, pretty tits. And I like that name too, Theodore, even though they're not, and don't stop me to say they are. Pretty tits, I may not have gotten you pregnant. You don't usually catch again this soon. If not, once I'm back from Plattsburgh, we'll keep on trying. And we did, Theodore, and I caught, as I told you." Brian went on, "We both know we're going to get into this war, or I wouldn't be going to Plattsburgh. It may last a long time. That million men springing to arms overnight is hogwash. When we do, I'll be gone again, and you'll be lonely. And we both know what a firecracker you are. I'm not telling you to jump the fence again. I said again, Theodore. But if you do, I expect you to do it on purpose, eyes open, and not to regret it afterwards. I have enormous respect for your taste and judgment. I know you won't cause a scandal or upset the children." She paused, then went on. "Brian knows me, Theodore. I really am a firecracker, and I've never understood why some women don't like it. My own mother, 9 children, and she told me on my wedding day that it was something women had to put up with for the privilege of having babies." Mrs. Smith snorted. "Put up with? Theodore, I was not a virgin when Brian first had me, nor had I let him think so. I told him the truth the day I met him, and 2 minutes after he took my bloomers off, he knew it through having me. Theodore, I broke my maidenhead 3 years before I met Brian, on purpose. I've never been a flirt, and told not my mother, but my father, because I trusted him. We've always been close. Father didn't scold me, didn't even tell me not to do it again. He said he knew that I would do it again, but hoped that I would take his advice and let him keep me out of trouble. And I have, and it did. But that first time, when I came to him, scared and ready to cry, it had hurt, Theodore, and wasn't the thrill I'd expected. That time, Father just sighed and locked the door and had me get on his surgery table and examine me and assured me that I hadn't been damaged, and I felt much better, and told me that I was as healthy a woman as he had ever examined, and would have babies with no trouble. And that made me feel smug, and Father was right. I have babies easily and don't yell. Well, not much. Not the way Mother used to. After that, Father examined me from time to time. Doctors don't ordinarily treat their female relatives, not for female things. But Father was the only doctor I dared tell. So Father helped me with my problems and got me all over any shyness about being looked at there or anywhere. Not that I was ever too shy. He told me that sort of modesty was dad-ratted nonsense, when Mother was telling me the exact opposite. I believed him, didn't believe her. But I was telling him what Brian said to me in bed that night. Brian added, "I want you to promise me one thing, Pussycat. If you find that you haven't kept your legs crossed, will you keep it to yourself until this war is over? I will do the same if I have something to confess, and I might. Let's not worry each other more than we have to until the Kaiser is taken care of. Then when I come home, I'll take you to the Ozarks. Leave the children home with someone, just us two, and you won't see anything but the ceiling while we get caught up. And also catch up on anything we need to talk about. Is it a bargain, my darling?" I promised, Theodore. I didn't promise not to jump the fence. He wouldn't let me promise that. I promised to be careful and to save any confessing until the war was won. I wanted to promise that much because he might not come back. Her voice had been steady up to the last. Then it broke, and he realized that she was crying. He started to remove his hand and to pull over to the side of the road. Mrs. Smith grabbed his hand, pushed it more firmly back between her thighs, and said, "No, no, do touch me and don't stop the car, or I might rape you." I don't know why it makes me so passionate when I let myself remember that Brian might not come back from the war, but it does. I've been that way ever since the day we declared war, and always have to look serene and calm and unworried for the children, for Brian. I haven't let Brian see me cry, Theodore. You have just now. I suddenly could not help it, but I would rather you told Brian that I tried to seduce you than have you tell him that I cried through fear that he might not come back. And now I'll stop it. Mrs. Smith took a kerchief from her purse, wiped her eyes, blew her nose. "Don't take me home yet. The children must not see me with my eyes red." Lazarus decided to break cover. "I love you, Maureen." "I love you, Theodore. In spite of my tears, you have made me happy by letting me unburden myself. And I should not have. You are going to war, too. I feel almost married to you now by telling you things I haven't been able to talk about with anyone else. If you had put me on the grass and had me, it would have been sweet and just what I planned. But this is even closer and sweeter. A woman can open her body to a man without opening her mind. I had two babies by Brian before I learned to open my mind to him, the way I have to you tonight." "Perhaps our minds are much alike, Maureen. Your father thinks we are cousins." "No, he doesn't, darling. He thinks you're my half-brother."
"Did he say that?"
"And I think so, too. By things Father did not say, dear Theodore. By how broken up he was when he misunderstood you about your intention to enlist. By the way he insisted that we must claim a service star for you. I feel sure he is right, and I want to believe it. Yes, that makes what I tried to do to you dreadfully sinful in some people's eyes. Incest. I did not care a whit. Since I'm pregnant, it could not possibly cause harm to a baby, and that's the only thing that could make incest wrong." How to tell her? How much to tell her?
but I must make her believe me. Your church would call it sinful. I don't give a fig for the church, Theodore. I'm not devout. I'm a freethinker, like Father. Church is a good atmosphere for children, and gives me a proper appearance as a respectable wife and mother. That's all. Sin would not stop me. I don't believe in sin the way the church means it. Sex isn't sin. Sex is never sin. What would stop me would be the chance of getting pregnant by someone other than Brian. But I am pregnant. That you and my half-brother didn't cause me a moment's fret. It just made me more anxious to tell you a warrior's goodbye. Maureen, I'm not your half-brother. Are you sure? Even if you're not, you're still my warrior. I was as proud as Father when you volunteered. I'm your warrior, be sure of that. But I need to know something. This man Nancy may marry, is he a Howard? What did you say? Is he on the approved list of the Ira Howard Foundation? He heard her catch her breath. Where did you hear of the Foundation? Life is short. But the years are long, she answered. Not while the evil days come not. Goodness, I think I'm going to cry again. Stop it. What is the young man's name? Jonathan Weatherall? Of the Weatherall Sperling line. Yes, I remember. Maureen, I am not Ted Bronson. I am Lazarus Long of the Johnson family. Your family. I am descended from you. For several moments, she seemed not to breathe. Then she said softly, I think I'm losing my mind. No, my gallant love. You have as strong and sane a mind as I have ever met. Let me explain, because I must tell you something, and you must believe me. Have you read a novel by Mr. Herbert George Wells called The Time Machine? Why, yes. Father has a copy. That's me, Maureen. Captain Lazarus Long, time traveler. But that book, I thought it was just a story. It is. But it won't stay that way. Oh, not quite the way Mr. Wells visualized it. But that's what I am. A visitor from a future time. I didn't intend to let anyone suspect this. That's why I claim to be a foundling. Not only is it hard to prove, but any attempt would interfere with my purpose, which is simply to visit this time and observe it. Might even get me locked up as crazy. So I've been careful to keep my mask on, as careful as, well, as you are. And talking to those Simpsons and not letting your children see you cry, you and I do it the same way. Audacity, plus never telling lies we can be caught in. Theodore, I think you believe this. Meaning that I sound sincere but must be crazy? No, dear, yes, that's what I meant. I'm sorry. No reason to be sorry. It does sound crazy. But I'm not afraid that you will have me sent to St. Joe. I'm as safe with you as you are with me. But I must find some way to convince you that I am telling the truth, because I am about to tell you something you must believe, or I have dropped my mask to no point. He stopped to think. How to prove it? Some prediction? It would have to be very short range to serve the only purpose he had in breaking cover. But he hadn't briefed himself on this year. He hadn't intended to arrive until 1919, and knew so little about the years before 1919 that he had even mixed up the date that the United States got into this war. Lazarus, damn your sloppy ways. Next time you make a time trip, you're going to memorize everything about the era that Athene can give you, and a wide margin on both sides. Woody's memories were no help. Lazarus did not even recall having been taken to Electric Park by a sergeant in uniform. Self-centered brat. Electric Park, he remembered, Woody Smith had gone there many times, but no visit stood out in his mind. Maureen, maybe you can think of some way I can prove to you that I'm from the future. Something that will convince you. But this is why I had to tell you. Brian, your husband, my ancestor, will come back unharmed. He's going to go through battles. Shells will fall around him, shots will whistle past his ears, but none will touch him. Mrs. Smith gasped. Then she said slowly, around him, shots will whistle past his ears, but none will touch him. Mrs. Smith gasped. Then she said slowly, Theodore, how do you know? Because you two are my ancestors. I couldn't memorize the Foundation's records on all the Howards of today, but I did study the files on my own ancestors, ones I might have a chance to meet. You, Brian, Brian's parents in Cincinnati. And I figured out that Brian must have met you because he had attended Rolla, then found you on a Missouri list of eligibles, not the Ohio list that the Foundation gave him. That's certainly something I didn't learn from you or Brian or Ira, and your children probably don't know it. Well, perhaps Nancy does. She's filled out her own questionnaire, hasn't she? Well, yes, months ago. Then it is true, Theodore. Or should I call you Lazarus? Call me anything you like, darling. But I still haven't proved anything. Just that I have had access to the Foundation's files, which might have been last year, not in the future. We're still looking for proof. I know a proof for a few months from now, but I must make you believe me tonight, so you will have no more tears on your pillow. And I don't know how. He caressed her thighs, touched her curls. Here inside you is proof that won't show up in time. This last baby Brian put into your sweet belly, it's a boy, dear ancestress. And you and Brian will name him Theodore Ira, which flatters me enormously. When I read his name in the records, I didn't know that he was my namesake, as I hadn't picked my assumed name yet. She squeezed his hand with her thighs and sighed. I want to believe you, but suppose Brian wants to name him Joseph or Josephine? Josephine is not a name for a boy. Darling, Brian will name his war baby for the other two stars on your service flag. This war means a lot to him. He'll probably suggest it himself, I don't know. I just know that Theodore Ira is the name you will register with the Foundation. My other ancestors, Adele Johnson, of course, your mother and Ira's wife, lives in St. Louis. Left him around the time you got married but didn't divorce him, which probably irked him. I don't think Ira is a man to be celibate simply because his wife leaves but won't turn him loose. He's not, dear. I'm certain Father has a mistress, and goes to see her some nights when he is supposed to be at that chess club. And it's not a chess club, it's a pool hall. I go along with the pretense because he calls it that in front of the children. He does play chess there. Father plays a fine game of billiards, too. Go ahead, darling. Lazarus. I'm willing to believe. Maybe we'll find something. Well, I don't think I'll look up your mother. I don't think I would get along with a woman who thinks sex is something to put up with. I got along with Mother only by lying to her. Father reared me far more than she did. I was his favorite. He let it show, which is why I'm careful not to let it show with Woodrow. Go on, Theodore. Lazarus. That's all of my ancestors you are related to, except one, our stowaway. Maureen, I'm descended from you and Brian through Woody. She gasped. Really? Oh, I hope it's true. True as taxes, beloved. And it may have saved his life. I've never been closer to infanticide than I was when we found him in the back seat. She giggled. Darling, I felt the same way. But I won't let anger show in my voice, even if I'm about to switch a child. I hope I didn't show anger, but I felt it. Beloved, I was so hard I ached. Until we found Woodrow. Honey love, I was raring to go.
And I was just as ready. Oh, Theodore, Lazarus. It's so sweet to be open with you. Yes, you're quite hard now.
Easy there. Don't make me climb the curb. I have been ever since we left the house, except when I forced it down. But the one Woody ruined was bigger and better.
Size isn't important. Theodore Lazarus, a woman must fit any size. Father told me that long ago and taught me exercises for it. And I never told Brian. I let him think that was simply how I am, and accepted his compliments smugly. I still exercise regularly, because my birth canal has been stretched again and again and again by baby skulls. And if I didn't exercise those muscles, I would be, in Father's salty language, loose as a goose. And I do so want to stay desirable to Brian as many years as possible.
And to the iceman, and the milkman, and the postman, and the boy who drives the grocery wagon.
Tease, I'd like to stay young there till I die.
You will, you 18-year-old prospective grandmother. Let's get our minds off sex and back to time travel. I'm still looking for a proof, so that you will know why I'm certain that Brian will come back okay. But to stop your worry, it must be something that happens soon, and certainly before Woody's birthday.
Why Woodrow's birthday?
Didn't I get that far? This war ends on Woody's next birthday, the 11th of November.
He added, I'm certain of that. It's a key date in history. But I'm racking my brain for some event between now and then, as soon as possible, to stop your worries, but... Oh, shucks, dear. I made a silly mistake. I meant to arrive after this war is over, but I gave my computer one critical figure with an error in it. Just a little one, but it made me arrive 3 years too soon. Not her fault. She accepts any data I give her, and she's as accurate a computer as ever conned a ship. Not a fatal error, either. I'm not lost in time. My ship will pick me up in 1926, exactly 10 Earth years after she dropped me. But that's why I didn't study the history of the next few months. I expected to skip this war. I'm not studying wars. Histories are full of wars. I'm studying how people live. Theodore, I'm confused.
I'm sorry, darling. Time travel is confusing.
You speak of a computer, and I'm not sure what you mean. And you said she cons, whatever that means, a ship that will pick you up in 1926, and I don't understand any of it.
Lazarus sighed. That's why I never intended to tell anyone, but I had to tell you, so that you could stop worrying. My ship is a spaceship, like Jules Verne, only more so. A starship. I live on a planet a long way off. But it is a time ship, too. She travels in both space and time, and it's too complicated to explain. The computer is the ship's brain, a machine, a very complex machine. My ship is named Dora, and the machine, the computer that cons it, runs it, steers it, is called Dora 2. That's the name she answers to when I speak to her. She's a very intelligent machine and can talk. Oh, there is a crew, two of my sisters, so of course they are descended from you too, and they look like you. A crew is necessary, can't let a ship go running around by itself, except automatic freighters on pre-calculated runs, but Dora does the hard work, and Laz and Laura, Lapis Lazuli Long and Lorelei Lee Long. Tell Dora what to do and let her do it. He squeezed Mrs. Smith's thigh and grinned. If that air blast had kept your skirts up 2 seconds longer, I would know more about how closely they resemble you, as they usually run around naked. They looked like you in the face. Bodies, too, from that too short glimpse of your lovely legs. Except that Laz and Laura are freckled all over as solidly as Marie is on her face. I'd be that freckled if I didn't stay out of the sun. When I was Marie's age, Father called me Turkey Egg. But all over? They don't wear any clothes? Oh, they enjoy fancy dress for parties. Or the weather might be cold, but it rarely is. We live in a climate like southern Italy. They don't wear anything very often. Lazarus smiled and caressed her thigh.
They don't need to leave their bloomers home to be ready for lovemaking. They don't own any bloomers. They aren't a bit shy. They would be delighted to trip your father. They like older men. They're much younger than I am. Lazarus, how old are you? Lazarus hesitated. Marine, I don't want to answer that. I'm older than I look. Ira Howard's experiment was successful. Instead, let me tell you about my family. Your family, too. We are all descended from you by one line or another. Two of my wives and one of my co-husbands are descended both from Nancy and from Woody. Wives? Co-husband? Sweetheart, marriage takes many forms. Where I live, you don't need a divorce or a death to gather in someone you love. I have four wives and three co-husbands, and my sisters, Laz and Lore, and they may marry out of the family or they may stay. And don't look startled. You say you didn't fret when you thought I was your half-brother. And don't worry about harm to babies. They know far more about such things at that when and where than they do in the here and now. We don't risk harm to babies. Of which we have plenty. And cats and dogs and anything a child can pet and take care of. It's a real family and a house to fit a big family. I can't tell you about each one. We've got to get our stowaway home. But I want to tell you about one, because you've been insisting that you don't look 18, merely because you've been using your breasts to feed babies. Tamara, descended from you through Nancy and her Jonathan. Want to hear about Nancy's umpty-ump granddaughter? Tamara is about 250 years old, I think. 250? Yes. One of my co-husbands, Ira Weatherall, also from Nancy and Jonathan, but from Woody, too, a name for your father, not for Ira Howard, is over 400 years old. Marine, Ira Howard's experiment worked. We have longer lifespans, inherited from you and all our Howard ancestors, but also in that when and where they know how to rejuvenate a person. Tamara has had two rejuvenations, one recently, and looks as young as you do. Real rejuvenation. Tamara was pregnant when I left. But how she looks is not important. Tamara is a healer, and I suspect she gets it from you. Theodore, Lazarus, again, I don't understand. A healer? Like a faith healer? No. If Tamara has a religious faith, she has never mentioned it. Tamara is calm and happy and serene, and anyone around her feels it so strongly, just as with you, darling, that he or she is happy too. If people are ill, they get well faster if Tamara touches them or talks to them or sleeps with them. But Tamara was not young when I met her. She was quite old and thinking about letting it go at that, dying of old age. But I was ill, very ill, sick in my soul. And Ishtar, later my wife and the top-notch rejuvenator in all the Milky Way, went out and fetched Tamara. Tamara, little round pot belly, breasts that were really baggy, sags under her eyes and her chin, all the old age things. Tamara healed the sickness in my soul just by being with me. And somehow this renewed her own interest in life, and she took another rejuvenation and is young again, and has already added another baby to the Marine Nancy line, and is pregnant still again. You and Tamara are so much alike, Marine. She's just love with some skin around it, and so are you. But Lazarus paused and frowned. Marine, I don't know how to convince you that I'm telling the truth. You'll know it when Woody's sixth birthday comes around and they blow every whistle and ring every bell and the newsboys shout, "Extra, extra, Germany surrenders." But that'll be too late to help you. I want to stop your worries now. I've stopped worrying, dear one. It sounds wonderful and impossible, and I believe you. Do you? I've offered no proof. I've told you a tale impossible on the face of it. Nevertheless, I believe it. When Woodrow is six, on the 7th of November. No, the 11th. Yes, Lazarus. But how did you know that his birthday is the 11th?
Why, you told me yourself.
Dear, I said he was born in November. I did not say what day. Then I deliberately misstated it, and you corrected me at once.
Well, maybe Ira told me. Or one of the children. Most likely Woody himself.
Woodrow does not know the date of his birth. Wake him and ask him.
I'd rather not wake him until we get home.
What is my birthday, dear one?
The 4th of July, 1882.
What is Marie's birthday? What is my birthday, dear one?
The 4th of July, 1882.
What is Marie's birthday?
I think she is 9. I don't know the date.
The other children?
I'm not sure.
My father's birthday?
Marie, is there some point to this? August 2nd, 1852.
Beloved Lazarus, who calls himself Theodore, I have a firm rule with my children. I keep each one from knowing the date of his birth as long as possible so that he won't advertise it and thereby blackmail people for presents. When one is old enough for school and needs to know the date, he is old enough to be told why. And I make it bluntly plain that if it drops hints ahead of time, no birthday cake, no birthday party. I haven't had to use that penalty. They are all intelligent. Last year Woodrow was too young for it to be a problem. His birthday came as a surprise to him. He still doesn't know the exact date, so I strongly believe. Lazarus, you know the birthdays of your direct ancestors because you looked them up in the Foundation records. Since you can't tell me the birthdays of my other children, I assume that I've found that proof.
You know I have had access to the records. I could have looked up any birthday last year.
Pooh. Why did you bother with the birth date of one child and skip the other 7? How would you know my father's birthday if he had not been of special interest to you?
It won't wash, beloved.
You intended to seek out your ancestors, and you came prepared for it. I no longer think that you showed up at our church by accident. You went there to find me, and I'm flattered. You probably did the same with Father, at his pool hall chess club. How did you do it? Private detectives? I doubt that our church or that pool hall can be looked up in the Foundation records.
Something like that. Yes, gentle ancestress. I looked for an acceptable way to meet you. I would have spent years on it had it been necessary, because I couldn't twist your doorbell and say, "Hi there, I'm descended from you. May I come in?" You would have called the police.
I hope I would not have, darling, but thank you for finding a gentler way. Oh, Lazarus, I love you so, and I believe every word, and I'm no longer worried about Brian. I know he'll come back to me. I'm feeling very brazen again and more passionate than ever, and I want to know something about your family.
I'm delighted to talk about them. I love them.
I was most flattered to be compared with your wife, Tamara. Darling, you don't have to tell me this. Does it ever happen that two husbands sleep with one wife?
Oh, certainly. But it's more likely to be one husband, Galahad, another of your descendants, grandmother. Galahad and two of our wives. Galahad is the original tireless tomcat.
That sounds like fun, but it's the other combination that intrigued me. Beloved, my idea of heaven would be to take both you and Brian to bed at once and do my best to make you both happy. Not that I ever can, but I can dream about it and will.
Why not out in the woods and strip down for both of us? Just to your French postcard costume, as long as you're dreaming.
Ooh! Yes, I'll put that into my dream. And now I'm about to go off like a firecracker.
I'd better take you home.
I think you had better. I'm terribly happy and quite unworried, and will stay so, and very passionate. For you, for Brian, for being a French postcard in the woods, in daylight.
Maureen, if you can sell the idea to Brian, well, I'll be around until the 2nd of August, 1926.
Well, We'll see. I want to, she added. Am I permitted to tell him who you are and where you're from, the future and your prediction that he won't be hurt?
Marine, tell anyone you wish, but you won't be believed.
She sighed. I suppose so. Besides, if Brian did believe it and thereby believed that he had a charmed life, it might make him careless. I'm proud that he is going to fight for us, but I don't want him to take unnecessary risks.
I think you're right, Maureen.
Theodore, my mind has been so busy with all these strange things that I miss something. Now that I know who you are, this isn't your country, and it's not your war, so why did you volunteer?
Lazarus hesitated, then told the truth. I wanted you to be proud of me.
Oh.
No, I don't belong here, and it's not my war, but it's your war, Maureen. Others are fighting for other reasons. I'll be fighting for Maureen. Not to make the world safe for democracy. This war won't accomplish that, even though the Allies are going to win. For Maureen.
Oh. I'm crying again. I can't help it.
Stop it at once.
Yes, my warrior. Lazarus, you will come back. You must have some way to know.
Huh? Dear, don't worry about me. People have tried to kill me in all sorts of ways. I've outlived them all. I'm the wary old cat who always has a tree within reach.
You didn't answer me.
He sighed. Maureen, I know Brian will come home. It's in the Foundation's records. He will live to a ripe old age, and don't ask how long, as I won't answer. And so will you, and I won't answer that either. But it is not good to know too much about the future. But me? I can't know my future. It is not in the records. How could it be? I haven't finished it yet. But I can tell you this. This is not my first war, but about the 15th. They didn't get me in the others, and they'll have to move fast to kill me in this one. Beloved, I am your warrior, but to kill Huns for you, not for them to kill me. I'll do my duty, but I'm not going to try some crazy stunt to win a medal, not old Lazarus.
Then you don't know?
No, I don't. But I promise you this. I won't stick my head up when I don't need to. I won't go into a German dugout without tossing a grenade in ahead of me. I won't assume that a German is dead because he appears to be. I'll make sure he's dead. I don't mind wasting a bullet on a corpse. Especially one who is playing possum. I'm an old soldier, and that's how one gets to be an old soldier. By being a pessimist. I know all the tricks. Darling, haven't quieted your worries about Brian. It would be silly to get you worried about me. Don't.
She sighed. I'll try not to. If you turn down this street, we can pick up Prospect, then across Lindwood to Benton.
I'll get you home. Let's talk about love, not war. Our girl Nancy. Is the Foundation now using a pregnancy rule for first marriages?
Goodness, you do know all about it.
No need to tell me. Nancy's business. If Jonathan does go to war, I don't know, I can assure you that he won't get his balls shot off, even if he loses an arm or a leg. I did look up the breeding records on all your children, even though I didn't bother with their birthdays. Jonathan and Nancy are going to have many babies, which means he comes back, or maybe gets turned down and won't go.
That's a comfort. How many babies?
Nosy little girl. You're going to have quite a number yet yourself, grandmother, and I won't answer that either. I withdraw the question about the pregnancy rule.
Secret, Lazarus.
Better start calling me Theodore. We'll be home soon.
Yes, sir, Staff Sergeant Theodore Bronson. Your lecherous old great-great-great-grandmother will be careful. How many greats shall there be in that?
Sweetheart, do you want that answered? If it had not been necessary to calm your fears about Brian, I would have stayed Ten Bronson. I like being your Theodore. I'm not sure that being a mysterious man from the future is going to be as comfortable, especially if you think of me as some remote descendant.
I'm here beside you, not in some far future. Beside me, touching me, and yet you're not even born yet, are you? And in your time, I'm long dead. You even know when I will die. You said so. You just won't tell me when.
Oh, confound it, Maureen. That's wrong all the way through. That's what comes of admitting that I've time-traveled. But I had to, for you.
I'm sorry, Laz. Theodore, my warrior. I won't ask any more questions.
Sweetheart, the fact that I am here means that you're not dead. And I certainly was born. Pinch me and find out. All nows are equal. That is the basic theorem of time travel. They don't disappear. Both past and future are mathematical abstractions. The now is always all there is. As for knowing the day you died, or will die, it's the same thing. I don't. I just know that you will have, many children. And you live a long time, and your hair never gets gray. But the Foundation lost track of you, will lose track of you, and your date of death never got into the records. Maybe you moved and didn't tell the Foundation. Shucks, maybe I came back. Will come back, and picked you up in your old age, and took you to Tertius.
Where?
My home. I think you would like it there. You could run around all day, dressed, undressed, as a French postcard. I'm sure I'd like that now, but I don't think I would as an old woman. All you would have to do is ask Ishtar for rejuvenation. I told you what she did for Tamra, when her breasts hung down to her waist and were empty sacks. But look at Tamra now, that now, pregnant again, just like a kid. But forget it. If it did happen, it will happen. Mama Maureen, I'm darned if I'll call you grandmother again. All I'm sure of is that I'm not sure of the date of your death, and I'm glad I'm not, and you should be. Nor of my death, and I'm glad of that too. Carpe diem. We're almost home. And you started to say something, and I said to call me Theodore, and we got off the track. Was it, about Tamra?
Oh, yes. Theodore, when you go home to wherever your home is, can you take anything with you? Or does it have to be just you?
Why, no. I arrived with clothes and money.
I'd like to send a little present to Tamra, but I can't guess what she would want from this time to that wonderful age of yours. Can you suggest something?
Tamra would treasure anything from you. She knows she's descended from you, and she's the most warmly sentimental of all my family. It should be something small enough to carry on my person, even in the trenches, as I'm always ready to abandon anything I'm not carrying. Have to be. Not jewelry. Tamra would not value a diamond bracelet one whit more than a hairpin, but she would treasure a hairpin that I could tell her I had seen you wearing. Something small. Something you've worn. Look, send her a garter. Perfect. One of these you have on.
Mayn't I send her a brand new pair? Oh, I'll slip them on for a moment, so that you can tell her truthfully that I've worn them. But these, not only are they rather old and worn, but I've perspired right through them tonight. They're not fresh and clean, and they do have naughty mottos on them.
No, one of these. Sweetheart, naughty today can't be naughty on Tertius. I'll have to explain any naughtiness to Tamra. As for perspiration, I hope that some trace of your sweet fragrance clings to them until I can get them to her. That would delight Tamra. You say this pair is old? Maureen, by any chance, are they about 6 years old?
I told you I was sentimental, Theodore.
Yes, this is the same pair. Old and faded and worn, and I've replaced the elastic. But the same pair. I picked them to wear for you.
Then I want one of them for me. Beloved Theodore, I plan to offer you both of them. That's why I suggested a new pair for Tamra.
Very well, dear. One for you, one for her. As soon as we're home, I'll trot upstairs, and when I come down, I'll have a present for you. And we'll tell you not to open it until you're back at Camp Funston. You just say thank you and go straight to your room and put it into your grip.
I see a light on the front porch, so now I must push my skirts down and be prim and proper Mrs. Brian Smith, with a smoldering volcano inside her. Thank you, Staff Sergeant Bronson. You have given my son and me a most enjoyable evening. Thank you, pretty little pussycat in green garters and no bloomers. Will you grab the teddy bear and the Cupid doll while I carry our chaperone? Ira Johnson and Nancy were not yet home. Brian Jr. relieved Lazarus of the limp child and carried him upstairs. Carol went along to put Woody to bed after exacting a promise from Uncle Ted not to go to bed before she came back. George wanted to know where they had gone and what they had done, but Lazarus put him off with a promise and used the chance to repair to his tiny bath and repair himself. Hair a bit must. Thank God.